Hello and welcome to NJ Biz Conversations. I'm your host, Jeff Kanige. My guest today is Oya Tukel. She is the Dean of the Martin Tuckman School of Business at the New Jersey Institute of Technology. Oya, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me. I appreciate it. There are a lot of things that we could talk about that our viewers are going to be interested in, and I'm going to get to those in a second. But I wanted to start with a little background on you and how you got to where you are. Correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, but my understanding is you were appointed dean in 2019. Before that, you spent about 27 years at Cleveland State University. You were involved in education and public policy issues in Ohio for that time, as you would expect of an established academic. So I'm curious, after all that time, what brought you to NJIT, to Newark, to New Jersey?
Sure, that's a good question, Jeffrey. So I was at the stage where after many years of being in academia as an instructor and then move on to administrative roles, I thought about, you know, retirement is ahead of me. Is this all I want to do or what I want to do next? And higher education changed considerably since 1980s. You probably relate to it being in business and always reporting about the higher education, the schools, what they are going through.
Certainly.
So Ohio is significantly, I would say, different than New Jersey. New Jersey is very dynamic. Mm-hmm. And of course, personal reason, I wanted to try the dean position before I retire. I had 10 years of being a department head, and then I became an associate dean. And I wanted to look to see what opportunities out there for me to actually have a saying in how the school will be moving forward. So I had a really well-defined vision at that time and a mission, what I want to do. And I wanted to have the right place that matches to my interest. So my background is in engineering, industrial engineering, and I graduated from a technical university. So when this opportunity came, I said, it's actually what all of us have to do as administrators to understand the technology and integrate it to higher education. The gap is amazingly big in terms of the perception of higher education, the deficiencies, and what we think we're doing is great. So I just want to make sure that we do what we say we do. And tell our story to the parents, to students, to state properly. So that was my interest. In 2019, I came. Almost a year later, we had COVID.
Right.
So, but it's technology, right? We did amazing work with the help of technology in the classrooms, in our communications. Where we are, although as humans we resist to change and worry about the AI and all of that, that really moved us, and we kept our jobs and we educated students, graduated students, and that's where I really do truly believe that technology plays a very significant role in business, and students need to be well educated in technology, and we put the business knowledge around technology, and that's what a big differentiator here at NJIT and also my business school, Martin Tuckman School of Management. And I really truly, I'm not, you know, just saying, and I truly believe it and I see it. So that's a game changer for the school. The last 4 years we improved the curriculum significantly, integrating technology in everything we teach. And that made a huge difference in terms of meeting the workforce requirements in this region.
Okay. Well, you anticipated the question was that I was going to ask you about basically how it was going for you. Because as you said, you started in July of 2019. You really haven't had a full non-COVID year on the job, but it sounds like you and your colleagues have been able to cope with all of those challenges, yes?
Absolutely, yes. So we pivot, right? It seems like these days we learn to pivot in life. We change careers, you know, layoffs come and go, financial institutions go through all these difficulties, and we become resilient, right, as humans. And that's what we did at NJIT. It's just that we had the infrastructure for using technology to stabilize us and keep moving. So really, COVID was not a big impact for us, although, you know, feeling wise, we felt bad about not being able to see our students face to face. But now we're all face to face. We went back to normal. We start increasing our enrollment during COVID. And I think that's the aha moment for a lot of parents and students, that we have to better understand what they mean by artificial intelligence, what they mean by machine learning, what is this cryptocurrency that people are purchasing. So we don't want them to be a sideliners. They need to be in it, knowing it. And business school, we do not really back office teaching that technology development. But when technology is there, how do we use it?
Of course.
To benefit your area, your accounting, your digital marketing, your fintech, financial technology. That's the area we, you know, a new bachelor's of science degree we started last year, doubled the enrollment, because everybody knows financial institutes are automated. They cannot really, you know, not learn the tool set to be able to get hired or keep the job.
Right.
So that's where we are.
Okay. Well, that leads me to the next question then, and that is, what are your priorities at this point? I mean, as you say, your students are back in person. I think the expectation is that at least for the rest of the year, and then starting with in the fall again, that will be the case. What are you, now that you see non-COVID processes and the situation extending before you, what are you planning for? What are your priorities at this point for the school?
Very good. So our priorities is of course placing our students to the right jobs, not any job, but the job where their background relates to the, you know, requirement of the job. So quality of the job matters, and the quality of the student background matters. So that match is very critical for us.
Okay.
We have to work on, that's the big thing right now is, and thank you for giving me this platform to be able to talk about the perception about higher education. So if you look at all these writings about technology CEOs, saying that they don't need somebody with a higher education degree. But if you look at the economy, the highest number of workers hired in the last, you know, after COVID, I would say 2020, is still bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. So just a small section doesn't believe in the higher education, which we create not only knowledge, but the person, the personality, the ethics, right? The soft skills, they're all here. They're all in higher education. We're shaping the workforce, not only technical knowledge. So that's not going to change. And there are a lot of, you know, companies still believing in that. There is a statistic, Jeffrey, I'll tell you, you know, our Chronicle of Higher Education recently had a, you know, survey done. Only 11% of the businesses do believe that they believe that the higher education is providing the best skilled workforce. Only 11 believe in that. That's a bad perception out there.
Mm-hmm.
That means 90% is still, you know, need to be convinced. If you ask the same question to higher education professionals like myself, 95% of us say, yeah, we do the job. So why there's such a big gap between what we're doing versus what they think we should be doing? Why there is a gap? So there has to be a better way to, you know, convince businesses that higher education is here to stay, and we are a main tool in here to be able to provide the workforce that they need and beyond, because we're not, higher education is not necessarily job specific. Jobs come and go, right?
Sure.
Look at how many jobs are not around anymore, but universities are here because we develop the person, the critical thinking, understanding numbers, right? Being able to read data and solve problems, that are all the fundamentals, like the foundations are here, we give them. And then what they want to do and how many times they pivot is up to them.
Okay. All right. Well, then those are interesting numbers, which I hadn't heard before. Then what? How do you see your role in changing that perception? Is it up to you to do it? Is it up to the students you graduate and send into the workforce? How do you change the perception that you just mentioned about tech CEOs not seeing the value of higher education?
Yes, very good. So we just have to make sure we place our students to big corporations, especially NJIT works with a lot of technology companies, and show the difference, right? If you hire from a technology-focused institute like NJIT or any of the, you know, universities that focus on technology, but also gives all the other, you know, skill sets to the student, mm-hmm. where do they stand? How quickly do they get to the C-suite, right? So that right. those statistics are out. So my job is to be able to connect with the businesses so that they can, you know, we can have higher number of students placed in the in these organizations. And okay. Tri-State is the center of commerce, right? Like, if we can't do that here, where else can we do it? It is all the businesses are here. We're lucky right. that way.
Right. Okay. Well, that leads into to another question I had, which was I spoke to the NJIT's president back when he was first appointed a couple of years ago. He was actually still in Texas at the time, and I asked him similar sorts of questions about what he saw the strengths of NJIT being. One of his main answers, and something he talked a lot about, was the diversity of the student body, the diversity of the faculty, the diversity of the community, the surrounding community. I'm curious. Number one, do you share that view? And number two, what do you see as if that's not the biggest strength that you see in the university, in the school, what is it? What do you see as what really should draw students to NJIT?
Absolutely. So NJIT is similar the ways that Cleveland State University is. It's an urban community. It's right. in downtown Newark, and I was in downtown Cleveland.
Okay.
And Cleveland had a bad reputation when I was there in 1990s about the rivers burning and all of that, which is mm-hmm. just absolutely not true. You know where Cleveland is right now.
Absolutely, yes.
But I come to Newark, and I found out that Newark has bad reputation in terms of like 1960s, what happened. But I live in Newark, right across from the campus.
Okay.
It's an amazingly nice place to live. I enjoy being able to walk to my office in 10 minutes. I never felt not safe on campus. It's just, you know, and it's an amazing historical city that offers a lot. So and that brings us so much diversity where we are located and the surrounding neighborhoods where we do almost all of our recruitment. So, and you see everybody is so nicely getting along in the classes, working together, and lifelong friendships being, you know, started here with very diverse, you know, student group as well as faculty. So this is really my very first place where I really see, you know, the talk is everywhere, but really mm-hmm. actually seeing it visually is at NJIT. And what is really good about our university is that we move them up in the ladder quickly, right? They come with the technology, the engineering, the computing, all these technical areas where, you know, there is job opportunities are really lucrative. They get a really nice standard when they graduate. So as you might know, that it's number one in terms of, you know, how we move the, you know, the social levels for our students. And it naturally happens. It's organic, I would say. It's not that we wanted to do a check 20%. We meet the diversity and here we are. It's the whole campus.
Right. Well, and for viewers who have not been to the area in Newark around NJIT, the University Heights area, it really is quite remarkable how vibrant that area is. It's especially when the students are around it, you really get a sense of life from that section of the city.
Absolutely. Newark is actually one of the very few cities in the nation that has this many universities within their borders.
Right.
I think we're like number one or number two. So there's so much knowledge generated right here in Newark. There are many small startups in Newark. Mm-hmm. So they have to come and revisit Newark when they get a chance. It's not the same. It's a great city to be working and living.
Right. And for a technical school, being in Newark, given the emphasis on technology companies and innovation throughout New Jersey, Governor Murphy has made it a major point of emphasis for his administration, and the city administration in Newark has done the same. How does NJIT fit into that sort of ecosystem of, you know, you have Newark Venture Partners with an incubator, Hax is coming in with another one. Where it must be for someone at NJIT, that must be pretty exciting.
Absolutely. And we do have, we went around and shake hands, like including Hax was here last year. So they do know talent is here. Mm-hmm. And we're very, you know, open to collaborations. We have been applying for grants and projects to be able to do it together, where faculty, students, and their workforce can be joined together, working on innovative ideas. Our campus is available to these companies. We always invite them. We have an amazing makerspace that they can use it together with our students to develop their ideas. Mm-hmm. We have a venture link where we help our students. That's the, you know, entrepreneurial facing of NJIT, which makes a lot of sense, right? A lot of technology learning, understanding, naturally leads into innovative ideas that students have working with their, you know, faculty. So All those need to be shaped into startups. And we have VentureLink that enables us to do. Entrepreneurship is across the campus and ecosystem in every program, including business. Business school teaches the entrepreneurship courses. Let me do a little, you know, advertising in here.
Okay, sure.
So we're number 30. We're number 30 in the nation in terms of our entrepreneurship program, number 30. But What enables us to do it is not only education, the applied part of entrepreneurship. We have entrepreneur students. They have ideas. They even look at these entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs, you know, how much money they raise from investors. That's an indicator of a good program, good school. So they look at these outcomes, and that's how they rank the programs.
Okay. All right. Let me ask you another question then about your role in the sort of educational firmament in New Jersey and Newark in particular. We do several programs every year on women in business, and we hear the same things over and over again. Women have a much harder time getting access to capital. They have a much harder time sort of working their way up the corporate ladder if that's what they choose to do, or as I said, getting access to capital if they choose to start their own business. I'm wondering, do you see a role for either yourself at the School of Management or NJIT as an entity in trying to help or encourage, assist or encourage women in pursuing whatever form of business they'd like, starting their own or working up the corporate ladder?
Absolutely. You know, those have been issues all along, right? Mm-hmm. So being women in technology field is many times very lonely.
Absolutely.
And my campus, the statistics, 30% female, 70% male. So this is not intentional, obviously, but it starts at the very early ages that, you know, we do not encourage girls, you know, in our houses when they are growing up 5-6 years old, that kind of a job and interest would be fine. Like, we have to start that early. By the time they get to us, it's a little too late. And women do not have self-confidence that they can do well in math. They're not capable. It's just the self-confidence. Okay. And it has to be early on, not higher education, you're 18. So at that point in time, changing these statistics is a little late.
Okay.
Just has to be catered to wealth. It has to be parents, mothers, right? Mothers encouraging, you know, girls to get more Legos, you know, to build things. But I have to say, in terms of corporate, so obviously there are a lot of studies done in terms of why women are not moving up in the corporate ladder. There are unfortunate parts of corporate America is that, like, finance is a lot of, you know, male compared to female, because it's money and it feels like, you know, they're much more, you know, they can handle it than a woman. And also, unfortunately, there is a really good sponsorship. It's not unfortunate for the males, but there is a really good, you know, support system in organization early on, that you have a mentor and you have a sponsor. So the mentor is kind of helping you adjust to the environment and help you with your job. But a sponsor is somebody above you, maybe your supervisor, maybe two levels up your supervisor, who have a genuine interest to get you ready for the next level of the position. That's a sponsor. So you see that sponsorship very common between males, right, in the organization. But you don't see that among women. Even the successful women at the higher levels are not sponsored for women at the lower levels to support them to move up. Mm-hmm. So that's what we have to work on. I think we cannot just, you know, blame that we just also have to help each other. So somebody who's, you know, a CEO as a woman, that CEO has a responsibility to sponsor. And sponsorship doesn't mean money. Sponsorship is getting an opportunities and getting the person ready, you know, skill-wise and also opportunities-wise to the higher level, professional development.
Okay.
We're not doing a good job with that. And I think that that's a big factor in corporate America.
Okay. Is that something that the School of Management can help young women, your students? Can you say to them, you know, listen, this is, you're going to get a great education here and you're going to get a good start when you make it there. Remember who's coming from behind you. Is that an appropriate role for NJIT?
Absolutely. Especially in technology area, right? Mm-hmm. You have to have this more than ever before. So soft skills need to be wrapping around the technical skills. So business knowledge is wrapped around the technology. So we have to make sure what we started doing is, instead of having a linear course after course after course and 120 credits, you're done, we created competencies. So by this time, with these courses, you have to develop your digital competency. Mm-hmm. By this time, with these courses, you have to develop your, you know, competencies in soft skills, because business needs soft skills. Business is not only technology. Business has art in it, right? Business has communications in
Certainly.
It. So we broke down our curriculum into set of competencies that the students needs to get before they graduate. Mm-hmm. Not passing a class with a C, but making sure that competency is developed. It's a much harder, you know, way of managing curriculum, but, you know, we're not a mass production school with 50,000 students. We are a smaller school, so we manage it, because we have one-on-one time with our students, and we do have advisors time to sit down and say, look, you have to take this course because that's your part of your digital competency that you have to make sure you have it. Otherwise, fintech companies, you know, will not be interested in you, like cryptocurrency and blockchain. You need to know it because it's a currency. Right. In finance, you need to understand blockchain to be able to deal with cryptocurrency. And if you don't know that, you can't be advising to an investor, right? So all of that has to make sense, and it has to be a nice curriculum that aligns with the workforce, you know, requirements when they graduate.
Okay. Well, I think there are a lot of women in business who will be happy to hear that you make that a point of emphasis at the school. You've been very generous with your time. I just wanted to cover one more subject with you, and that is an area of your academic expertise, which is supply chain, chain management. We talked about the pandemic before. I'm sure you're aware you were here in New Jersey throughout the pandemic. There was a lot of talk about how the pandemic had exposed vulnerabilities in supply chain. Medical institutions couldn't get the kind of equipment that they needed because of the disruption in the supply chain. And there's been, since then, again, a lot of talk about what should be done about that. I'm curious, from your perspective, has any progress been made? Is there any hope for folks who wanted to see those kinds of vulnerabilities dealt with, the supply chain improved? What do you see at this point going on in the state and nationally and internationally? Because it's not just a New Jersey problem; it's a global problem.
Yes, absolutely. One thing that put attention to is a supply chain, right? Because people they enjoy eating wonderful bananas from Honduras, but they never thought about it, how that banana traveled 4,000 miles to get to that supermarket, right? Now that all of this is disrupted and everybody start paying attention and reading about supply chain. So that's my area. I was very happy that now we have educated consumers who understand what it takes to get what they want with like this at the doorsteps. Mm-hmm. So that's an amazingly complex system, and one disruption can really make things worse. So what I want to mention is that COVID did one thing good for supply chain. It surfaced up the weakest links in these chains, right?
Right.
And a supply chain as good as its weakest link. So if you do not fix that weakest link, you know, your supply chain will always have problems. And the longer supply chains all around the world have so many players and so many weather changes, you know, severe weather changes. We have, you know, governmental changes. We have COVID hits. So made a lot of vulnerability around their networks. And suddenly, you know, the ones who have a really good control over their supply chain survived. The ones that the links broken had still do have, you know, difficulties to recover. The ones who are selfishly only looking at their profits, but they are part of supply chain, those supply chains, unfortunately, are still not recovering very well because they are very focusing on internally their benefits. But supply chain is helping all of us. You know, let's get together, form a chain, and we all have to do well to be able to, you know, make this work. So that thinking, selfishness kind of left with all these recent things happening, created these supply chains not to recover very well. But it will work. The ones who are investing heavily in technology, the digital transformation, are the ones who covered much more quickly. That's why in New Jersey, the modernization of the ports are so critical, and we're not there, as you know. You know, we still have a lot of delays and a lot of, you know, the congestion, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to really invest in digitalizing our infrastructure. European ports are amazing. You know, Hong Kong port is an amazing example. So we just have to benchmark those and invest in there. Some of our systems are very outdated. So we just have to work on it. And businesses expect that those links in the supply chain needs to work better. They cannot wait for something to clear from the port in days and weeks, right? It has to move quickly. And we're the busiest port in the nation now.
Right.
We passed the California ports.
Right.
So that means that we, you know, as a state, we really have to pay attention to our infrastructure, because that's the critical part of supply chain.
Okay. Well, that was the issue I was then going to ask you about, was who should be making those investments? Is this a government problem, or is it a problem with the businesses that are actually in the supply chain? What I hear you saying is it's probably both. I mean, the improvements
absolutely
of the port,
both,
for example, is the port authority. So, yes, go ahead.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It is collaboration, right? The businesses and support from the local government is what will make it possible. It's long term, right? These infrastructure changes will take years and years. It's just not a quick fix.
Right.
But technology is here. So there's no excuse not integrating technology. Just we have to retrain the workers whose jobs are going to be automated for them to do other jobs. And that's the critical thing that, you know, politicians don't like to get too much into it, but it's not a job loss. It is pivoting your career.
Right.
And it has to be a path defined for the workers. Because again, I mean, you know, these ChatGPT all over the place talking. What happened finally is that we have good enough of a technology that can do a lot of jobs. And there's all these reports out there saying what a ChatGPT can replace. Editors, I don't want to put you into this, but
let's not go there.
Is in jeopardy, Jeffrey. You have to start. We have a great MBA program, Jeffrey, if you want to come over.
All right.
Retool yourself.
I'll think about it.
But those jobs, editors, writers, you know, accountants, whatever rule-based, like accounting, taxation, those are going to be disrupted big time, already being disrupted.
Absolutely.
So marketing, right? Marketing.
Yes.
Because
yes,
a lot of the writing can be done very nicely. If you wanted to put together a flyer, you will get it in 10 seconds for free. So that's what I'm saying. You can't resist to change. You just have to find out how you can pivot to improve your skills, to be ahead of the technology.
Okay.
Technology is as good as we define it, right?
Okay, perfect. Well, that's a good place to end it.
We could
have an entire discussion about that one issue. So I appreciate
your
taking
it's very
time.
Exciting, though.
Okay, Dr. Aya Tukail, the Dean of Martin Tuchman School of Management at NJIT. Thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And thank you all for watching. Until next time, stay safe, everyone.